Hello, and welcome to It's All About Choices. This is the show where my guests and I discuss our lives and our careers framed through the choices we've made. Some good, and some bad. My name is David Barrow, and for those of you that don't know me, I've been working in IT service-related roles for 29 years now. The year 2023 will mark my 30th year in the workplace. It's a career that started upon leaving school with very few qualifications and just a passing interest in information technology. I didn't set out to do this job. In fact, I didn't really set out to do many of the first few jobs that I had. But these 30 years have flown by, and really that's through a mixture of luck, judgment, and some questionable choices along the way that finds me where I am today. During this series, my guests and I will reflect on the choices we have made, those that have led us to today, as well as our future choices. And we do this not just for ourselves, but because we think it would be great to share these experiences to help others on their career journeys who face similar paths to those we faced across our multiple career paths. Each episode of It's All About Choices will begin with a period of my own journey, but it'll be framed through my guests who will be people I first met at that time. And today I'll be speaking to Dave Laycock. Dave and I first met back in 2010, and back then I worked for Dave. And if I'm honest, this time working together really reset and challenged so much of my thinking and also my approach to work. At the time, I'd grown confident, I considered myself experienced, and I wasn't shy in that belief. But working with Dave showed me that you could blend approaches and styles to achieve even better results. So today, Dave and I will discuss the choices that led to us working together, how Dave changed my approach, and his future. If you're watching live via YouTube or LinkedIn, please feel free to ask questions or simply say hello. After all, it's all about choices. Dave, how are you doing? Welcome to It's All About Choices.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. It's a real honour to be here.
I know. I'm so happy you've agreed to come on. I'm somewhat privileged. And I think where I'd like to kick off, if we may, is just understanding more about your career path, what led you to us being together down on the South Coast in 2010. What did that look like?
Yeah, it was good. I think we both worked for a large outsourcing company at the time. And for me, I had a lot of roles that offered a bit of variety until I found a particular discipline that I really enjoyed doing. And I'd like to say some of it and a lot of it was planned, but if I'm honest, a lot of it wasn't. It was kind of just rolling with the flow of things, certainly earlier on. And then, yeah, finding myself in Worthing, working with you and the rest of the team was all part of that journey. So, yeah, it's been very interesting from a career perspective.
And did you always want to work in digital and IT, or did things start slightly differently and move in a different direction at all?
It did. I mean, going back quite a number of years, probably far too many to mention, but doing A-levels and IT at the time, computer technology, whatever it was called back in the day, was an interest. And I think at the time it was mostly technical, but it kind of touched on things like project management and that, and all of it was quite interesting. And I spent the first few years of my kind of IT career working in computer operations, which is probably the granddaddy of WebOps, DevOps, as we know it today. So it was kind of technical, but a little bit more physically hands-on. It was literally changing the old tape decks that you sometimes see, which sounds like, well, it was a different era, wasn't it? And then kind of find myself working in the banking industry. So I worked for a couple of banks in the north of England. And then took a more technical support role, which in hindsight was a little odd because I kind of wasn't sure if that was an area I wanted to go in. And that brought us into the large outsourcing provider arena. And then you are suddenly open to all these opportunities, all these different roles and disciplines that exist. And it's not just technology that moves at a quieter pace, you know, whether it's a new phone every year or, you know, an upgraded laptop every 2 or 3 years because it's just phenomenally different from the previous one. But I think the way that the whole IT industry and services in particular how that evolves at just as fast a rate. So the things both you and I are doing today, you know, weren't really much of a thing 20 years ago. So you talk about, you know, your 29th year, like I said, the industry just continues to change at a rate of knots. But back then it was, even with permanent roles before we worked together, I'd only ever been in an employer for no more than 2 or 3 years. And it was like, I kind of want to move on. I want to do something different. I want to progress. And then do another 2 or 3 years there, and then another 2 or 3 years. But I think by the time we met, certainly in total, I was at that employer for probably about 18 years. But I think the real value for me was that, well, actually what I could do is do an assignment, and it might be a few weeks or it might be a few years. And I think that continued variety not just made things interesting for me, but also kind of you pick these different things up and you put them in your arsenal and you carry them around and you pull them out. Actually, that'll be useful. I learned that in that thing I did 3 years ago. That would work really well here. And you don't realize you're doing it. It's only when people, and when we start to work together, for example, that we say, well, how about we do it this way? And it's not necessarily a kind of spark of, I know, let's do it this new, interesting way. It's something that you touched on a moment ago, which is, well, actually, let's just learn to do something a little bit differently. We did this. Let's try it with that because it might work here. And before we worked together, I remember I was in a very fortunate position. It was quite an autonomous role in a particular area. And I was working with a small team of 3 or 4 people. And we had the remit to try and move things along in a certain area. And one of the people that we worked with said, I've got this really good idea. I'd like to try and do this. It means changing that. I was like, that's brilliant, let's do it. And he came from a background that was a lot more rigid and a lot more disciplined. And it was like, what do you mean, let's just change it? I was like, well, yeah, let's just change it. That sounds like a really good idea. I can see the value. I can see how it's going to work. Let's do it. And there was a pause and a kind of, not a look of horror, but certainly a thought going through his head that was like, what if it doesn't work? And my view was that, well, we'll change it again. You know, it really, that's the kind of autonomy we had, and that's the kind of fortunate kind of roles that sometimes you walk into, that you get that that culture, even in a small environment, in a small team, that it's like, well, let's change it, and if it works, they're brilliant. We'll tell people it worked and they might adopt it elsewhere. If it doesn't, then we'll tweak it and we'll change it again. And I'm going back 15, nearly 20 years. And I think that's where what I work in now, an agile delivery, there is that if you work in the right environment, there is an appetite to try and change things, you know, with a considered element of risk, but change things, improve things, how can we make this better? I kind of went down that route. And even working with yourself when I came down to Worthing, I remember speaking with the director that we both worked for at the time, well, I was about to work for. He invited me down to Worthing for 2 or 3 months just to do this little piece of work. And I think I was there nearly a year in the end.
Yeah.
But it was a great time. It was a great little team. The customer were open to some changes. We had to kind of pull them along a little bit. But I think it worked really well. But again, it's having the tools and the team to work with. There was no scrimping on the tools we could use. I think the director was very open for us to use a lot of things. And the experience and the attitude of the team we worked with, it just all worked, which is brilliant from my point of view. And I think from our point of view together, I think we achieved a lot there.
I think you're right. Although I must say, I think you undersell your involvement in that because I'll be honest, I came into that organization and that team having... I've talked in previous episodes about my time at IBM, very structured, very, very correct ways of doing things. Then I moved into investment banking, completely the opposite. But the way I managed to work there was by applying that structure and by applying those correct ways of doing things. Mm. And I was still doing that when I met you. I was still trying to apply fairly rigid ways of working. I've christened or given this particular episode "When I Till Met Agile" because for me that was when they met for me, and that was because I met you. I was very focused on the way I liked to do things, but it's because I didn't know there was another way to do things.
Yeah.
And I think your way of working was one that didn't inspire any conflict. I'll be freely honest and admit back then, if it wasn't my way, it was the highway. In my mind, at least, I neither had the gravitas nor the power nor the position to actually make that happen. But just, you know, that would be my emotive reaction. But yeah, with working with yourself, like you said, you gave people, myself included, the confidence to try new things. You applied an element of risk management that was, this one's worth a shot, let's go and do it. And you were able to empower us to carry that stuff out. And I'd not really seen that before. So you almost, I guess you put out my emotive flames before they even sparked up, because I was like, oh, wait a minute, this person's entertaining my idea, but also giving me, but what if? And I quite liked that. So I think that's why I found you to be a great mentor at the time. And I think that's why the team worked well, was there was a number of good leaders there. I'll hopefully be speaking to Liz in a future episode. But you were great at seeing what we were strong in, but also helping us understand where we could develop without making it feel like it was personal or critical, which I really take on board. I think it was fantastic, and I can only thank you for that. It really did change my ways of working.
It was an honor. I think, like I said, we had some good times. We had some successes, and I think it's sometimes people aren't open to that level of change. And it didn't feel that big at the time, but you know, we had lots of little successes, and then we have a big success, and you know, we might have had a few drawbacks on the way around as well. I remember the feedback thing, the taking on of new ideas, and perception plays into that as well. I remember people saying, "Oh, what about this?" And you know, I would go to some of the harshest critics for feedback, and like, "Well, what did you think to that? How did that work?" And they would say, "Well, we felt this," and I was not offended. I was a little taken back with some of the feedback. So I was like, "Why?" And it's that kind of reflection. Well, why did they say that? And again, it was a perception. It was a perception of something that had happened. I was like, "Ah, okay, maybe I didn't sell it well. I didn't sell it the right way up front." Yeah. And then because of that, you kind of learn to, it's that negotiation tactic, isn't it? It's that being able to, actually, if I'd have sold that slightly differently, I could have done exactly the same thing, but the perception of it would have been different. And I think that's played into a lot of what we do now at any level, you know, not necessarily trying to sell anything big, but just something, you know, with the team, if we're trying to work in a certain way or deliver a certain thing, even with the teams I'm working with now. And it's not necessarily a conscious decision. It's like, oh, hang on a second, we're going to need to do this a different way around. But there's advantages to doing that. So let's sell the advantages of doing that different way around.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that's kind of how things played out.
It's true. I mean, I remember us being in meetings with, you know, fairly senior people in senior roles in senior establishments, and you were able to understand what they were looking for, and then tailor an approach to maybe get it in a different way. I remember they had quite well set cycles in terms of times, and we were able to challenge that a little bit in terms of helping them to get the best value. But also, I remember I talk a lot today about impactors and influencers, and I remember you saying to me, "Go and get some feedback from somebody you don't want it from." I was like, "Not sure I like the idea of that." But it was so true. I was able to not only gather the courage because I had your support to go and get that feedback, and I think you probably said words to the effect of, "Whatever comes back, we'll deal with it, and we'll see what comes out of it, and we'll figure out a way to approach it." Whereas my previous reaction would have been A, not to go and get it, and B, if I had gone and got it, to have found a very quick way to sort it out just directly, you know. But your approach was so different, and it works so well. And now, in my current career, guys, I work a lot in large organizations, and I still use those lessons today, which is go and find out who those impactors and influencers are. And I'm not talking about a racy model. I'm talking about people that have a voice, they own something, or they have a voice but don't own something. And get those harshest critics to tell you what they want, and then you can help them achieve that, and then suddenly that makes things a lot easier. And I think that's just life, isn't it, really? It doesn't have to be technology, but in careers it's so important that you do things that way. I now know. Took me 15 years nearly to find out. But
it's interesting though, isn't it? Because I think you can learn these things. It's just made me realize, you know, when I kind of, after my operations experience in a couple of banks in Yorkshire and then moving down to the West Midlands, one of the first people I worked for was a director called Chris. And actually thinking about it, he was the one that instilled that, because when I first met him, I thought he was quite scary. You know, he was quite imposing. He knew what he was doing. He knew the area. He knew a lot of the people. But actually, and this was my perception that was, you know, probably incorrect when I first joined that team, and I am going back, nearly 30 years. It was that realizing actually he wants to help. He wants to, you know, if he's got some feedback for you, it's constructive. Take it on board. Work with it. In the same way, like you said, then if the feedback is not necessarily negative, but if it's something that needs to be worked on, then that's okay. You know, we can work on it. I think, you know, even now I do that. Even when I'm doing that, you know, working for myself, that I've been doing for a number of years now, still working with teams that might be civil servants, because I work predominantly in the government space, and helping them. But also a lot of the people I work with in that respect, I also work with their kind of team lead, their managers, their line managers, which enables me to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. That, you know, I will say to them, actually, what I've been speaking with such and such about is this, and actually what will help them is this. So the kind of that relationship starts to build. So that's something I'm still able to facilitate even now. And like I say, not necessarily consciously or in a big way, but with the smallest of things about how things are done or how things are presented. And yeah, it makes a difference. And I think it's done in such a way that actually people then start to appreciate that constructive feedback rather than fear it. Because they know, like you said, they have the support to do something positive with it. And I think going back 30 years, culturally, maybe things have changed. Maybe we didn't necessarily have that, did we? We were very fortunate, I think, if we had that 20 or 30 years ago from a manager. Don't get me wrong, they were out there, but certainly there's a lot of people that, you know, if you had negative feedback, it would score you down. It wasn't an area to develop. It was seen as that's a little cross on that one. And I think that culture's changing.
No, I agree, and it brings me to a question actually. I mean, around your approach, was that something that you think is just you, you know, naturally, or was there a moment or some, you've explained there wasn't a moment, but was there any courses or training that you did that enabled you to really bring that out, or do you think it's just that's you and it's the way you are?
I think it's probably a combination of things. Partly that's the way I am, and you know, I found a niche in an area in an industry I enjoy that I can impart the things I enjoy doing and working with people. Training a little bit, yeah, I think training it helps. There are some standout experiences that I didn't want to do, I didn't want to engage with, but I kind of took it on the chin and I kind of went ahead with it. I think one in particular was where I kind of just moved into a team. The previous team had been rolled off for one reason or another, and I had to work with one of the team leaders who clearly had taken offence to what had happened and how it had happened. And I had to have a real, I want to say it was a gritty, clear the air session with him. And it took 5-10 minutes at most. It wasn't a big thing. But I really wanted to get him on side. I really needed him to get him on side. And it was that kind of experience that actually what could have been quite a confrontational thing was a productive thing that allowed me to say, look, you know, I really don't want to have an issue here. You know, I'm in this situation. I know you're in that situation. I know what's happened in the past. But what I want to try and do is work with you and kind of go with it. You know, are you okay with that? And you know, not many people want to be in a confrontation. So it was something that turned into a positive outcome in that respect, and it did really clear the air. You know, I didn't enjoy it. I dreaded the thought of having to go into that conversation, but we did it. I came out the other end, and it was a relief. And it's that kind of experience. It's putting yourself in that experience, that particular moment in time, that you can add to your arsenal. It's like, oh, actually, that wasn't too bad. I could do that again if I needed to. And yeah, then work with people, because you know, not everybody you work with enjoys what they do or is in a happy place. So you can't just assume that there's something negative or personal about that, because 9 times out of 10 there really isn't. So it was, yeah. So I think there's a combination, a bit of training, a bit of the way I am, and also the experiences you go through. So it really is a case of putting yourself in those positions, and but in a really positive way.
I completely agree. I've been chatting with people a lot recently about, and I've tried to boil what you're talking about down to being comfortable being uncomfortable. Yeah. And if you put yourself in that situation once or twice, you're no longer uncomfortable. You're just comfortable being comfortable.
Yeah.
That isn't like 100% success rate, but it's the most likely outcome. You can sometimes always be uncomfortable in a situation, because that's you stick me in a boxing ring, I'm obviously going to be uncomfortable all the time. I'm never going to be good enough to be comfortably uncomfortable. But in the workplace, you can generally work through those things. And I think another great thing I learned from yourself, but also from working on that particular area, is that we are all just humans. We all have emotions, and you can sometimes put people on a pedestal where you're uncomfortable going to them just based on their job description or something. And actually they're just somebody you can go and speak to and have a conversation with, and ultimately it can work out quite well. I do apologize for any background noise, by the way. There's somebody sanding down my staircase who should have finished yesterday. So we'll see how we go. So we worked together at Capgemini for a few years, and we both continued to work in Capgemini, but in different roles. In my case, I went off to go and begin my consulting life as a Capgemini consultant. And in your case, if I recall correctly, you went off and were running some large programs of work for Cap. But now, or not now, in the last 7 or 8 years, you've become an independent consultant. So how did you arrive at that choice? And it's a loaded question, because I kind of know the answer from my own experience, and you've already talked about moving around every 2 years or so. But do you think that background helped with the move to being that independent consultant, and was it a hard choice?
It certainly helped. There's no two ways about it. I think it partly gives you the confidence, but even now there's still that element of imposter syndrome where you go somewhere and you think, actually, how am I going to know as much as these people who have been here 2 or 3 years? And actually, I think the value is from the previous experience that you bring. They don't necessarily, areas don't necessarily want a clone of what they've already got, unless it's exceptional. I think it's that experience. So when I went into the kind of program management side, there were still some hairy times. You're going in there and sometimes you don't get handovers when you're taking over something. So getting a handover is considered a luxury. But then the flip side to that is, without a handover, you've no preconceptions about what's been done and how it's been done. So you can go in and tweak things a little bit. So there are pros and cons. But in terms of going to work for myself, I think that was something I'd always wanted to do. I just wasn't sure when I was going to do it. I knew that if I never got around to it, I would regret it. And so really part of it was timing, part of it was just taking the plunge and just going for it. Fortunately, I had a role lined up, so I could jump straight into that. It was a kind of role that was a parallel to one I'd done as a permanent employee. So by that time, I was kind of a bit of program delivery management and flipping from a permanent employee and then working for myself as an independent consultant. What that made me realise was, actually, first of all, it seemed like a natural step, going from being a permanent employee doing this to working for myself doing this as well. But quickly realising, actually, it wasn't the bit I enjoyed doing. I enjoyed the kind of hands-on delivery management at team level. And I think I'd missed that over the previous few years. So then my next engagement was doing that delivery management role. And it was so good. I was, again, fortunate enough to work with a really good team, doing some really good things. You make friends along the way, and we worked together. We delivered a lot of things. Even in tough times, we were able to pull on experiences and actually help other teams as well. It could be like, oh, actually, John, I've got a really good idea. If you help the DevOps guys, that might free up some of the space that we need to do. And suddenly you've got this, not necessarily team collaboration in the immediate team, but on that periphery, you're starting to collaborate with other areas really well. And yeah, I was in my element then. I really enjoyed kind of helping facilitate that and working with that. So bringing all that previous experience, but then actually jumping into a role I really wanted to do, what's that, 6 years ago? So I was doing the program manager role for a couple of years and then into delivery management from 6 years ago, which is kind of what I've been doing a step before that. That's what I've been doing since and really enjoy it. So experience is a big thing, but I think it's the value of working with different people that can, you know, benefit you as a person and your own development. I think that's where the real value is. And going back to your point, you know, get feedback from people that you wouldn't ordinarily get feedback from, because they can really help you.
Absolutely.
I
completely agree. In a lot of my consultancy now, I build communities across organizations, and I'll have, they always tend to start as a digital community. But even that's progress, because in the past it would be the service management community or the DevOps community. Now they're instantly together, because the way we're blending methodologies is changing. But yeah, I've got people from HR on these communities now, from finance, from the C-level. And it really does break down those barriers of, oh, can I speak to that person? Well, they're right here, so speak to them now. And these communities, I'm finding, are delivering just so much more than a set of outputs. It's much more focused on outcomes, on value. And again, I take a lot of that from when we worked together, because we were able to work in that organization across the client, across levels in the client, as well as our own teams, and then applying that as a sort of an individual. You have to be able to do, to sort of increase your network, because you are on your own and you need to go and get hold of people. And like you say, if you've not got a handover, so you don't know who to go to, you're just going to start grabbing people and saying, "What? How are you involved in this? What do you do? Yeah. Tell me some more," and building knowledge that way.
That's a really good point. It does remind me of a time when I think I was relatively new to a particular program of work. And I'd made excuses to talk to, I think it might have been the networks team, whatever it was, I can't remember the detail, but it was like speaking with the networks team, because actually I had a little query. I could probably have found out, but I went to speak to somebody in the network team who helped me out. And it was only a short while after that, you know, maybe days or a couple of weeks, when there was a problem and somebody said, "Oh, we need to speak to somebody in the networks team." And being a new person, I was like, "Oh, I've got to speak to Mary," or whoever it was at the time. And they're like, "I don't know who that is." I was like, "Well, they're working the other team. I'll go speak to them." And then they commented that they'd been here like 3 years and didn't have a clue who Mary was, and I'd been there like 3 or 4 weeks. And it was quite interesting then, that made me realise actually that little bit of networking is something I enjoy, but actually be quite useful, quite, you know, invigorating actually, to be able to speak with these people and go, "Actually, I've got this problem." And invariably then, the reverse is true then, because, you know, the Marys of the world can then come to me and say, "Well, actually, can you help us with this? Because we've got this little niggly problem, and actually, if we did this, it would fix it," you know, and going, yeah. So suddenly you kind of, it's not just networking. Networking is a bit of a cliche, but it's this collaborating at different levels with different people all the time. And I had somebody recently say to me, "I'm sorry to pester you on this." And I was like, "Well, let me just stop you there. You're not pestering me. If you're not pestering me like this, then you're not doing your job and I'm not doing mine. So let's call it. You need to let me know something or need help with something, and let's resolve it together." So it was that, you know, let's reset that perception. We're both here to do a job. We enjoy what we do. We work well together. You're not pestering me. Let's do it. Let's resolve it. So that, I say networking, I think collaborating is probably a better phrase.
Yeah. And so true, isn't it? I when I work in organizations, I'm there for them. People say the same to me, "I'm sorry to pester you." I'm like, "I'm here for you, please." Tell me what you'd like to know. Tell me how I can help. And invariably, as you rightly say, it's a two-way thing. There's always something that comes back, even if it's just another person that you know you can go to for a thing. Or just another friendly face. I've got exactly the same scenario as you explained. I've been working in an organization for a little while now, consulting with them. And there was a gentleman doing an incredible job, but nobody knew what he was doing apart from his immediate circle. And when they discovered what he could do, he suddenly, there's all these people that now want a piece of him in the nicest possible way. But it was just because he was brought in to do a specific job. He finished that job. He was keeping that thing running really, really well, but looking around thinking, what more could I do? And I was like, well, actually, if you've got 10 minutes, maybe you could help me with this. And then suddenly we've got this amazing guy that's, you know, he's so keyed up now, and everyone else around him is. So, and I think that's just the inquisitive nature that maybe we both have, which is to just go in and say hello to people.
It is. And that scenario you just described then, it's a win-win, isn't it? I mean, it's a win-win all around. You know, it's from a business point of view, it's like getting the most out of people. But from an individual point of view, it's helping them just be more of them. If they want, you know, what more can we do? What more can we help you to do? And it sounds like he's quite a success story, because now he's probably enjoying more of, you know, the kind of other things he's getting involved in.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely he is. So you're also Agile coach.
Yep.
And you've probably answered some of this already, but what does an Agile coach do? What does a typical day in the life of an Agile coach look like?
I suppose we in Agile, I work as a delivery manager in a lot of government departments. That's kind of where I kind of really sold myself, and partly because that's what I really enjoy doing. And the kind of coaching sessions and mentoring sessions that I get involved in are really just probably a little bit more about understanding what individuals are doing, how they're doing it, how they're feeling, how they're progressing. If they're not doing most of the talking, something's wrong. But it's also about trying to kind of help them learn a bit more about themselves. It's like, how what can you do with that? What are your options? How are you doing it? And it's trying to go through their kind of mental processes. You know, and I've been coached. I enjoyed it. I really got a lot out of it. And it's that, it's almost like there's another version of yourself looking at you and saying to you, well, why did you do that? It's the other bits that you don't necessarily ask yourself. Well, why did you do that? How did that make you feel? How did that go? What happened with that? What are your options, Dave, with doing this? It's something I got, like I say, I got a lot out of. And I've kind of tried to mirror that when I'm doing the Agile coaching. You know, it's like, how do you feel about that? How's that going? What are your options? You're feeling exposed. How can you address that? You know, and really trying to listen to what people are saying, trying to really get them to explore themselves. And like I say, in some ways, it can sound a little bit corny, but you know, it's about getting a little bit more inside themselves to understand a bit more. And understanding Agile is, like I say, something I've enjoyed doing, and I continue to enjoy doing. And part of that is continue improving, continue to learning. You know, I must at least 3 or 4 days a week say every day is a school day. You know, it's that, you know, what can we learn out of this experience? What did we learn here? You know, what did you learn when you did that particular exercise? And then just getting them to explore that. I think on a more mentoring note, I've kind of worked with delivery managers and product owners in the Agile space, and kind of got them up. But in a practical space, when I'm working with a junior product owner, it's making sure that the team are aware that person, you know, is responsible for the backlog and the work that they have. Now, we might know what we need to do next, and we might know the order and how it will work, but let's bring that person along the journey with us. Otherwise, we could completely bypass them, and that will just bring everything down. So there's, in a practical sense, making sure that the whole team's bought into helping and mentoring somebody that's new. I use the example of product owners, where I've done that 2 or 3 times, but it could be a junior developer. It could be any junior role. It's like, let's not bypass that person. Let's bring them in. And for me, Agile is about, you know, it's that everybody's equal in the team. You know, let's hear their voices. We do these things, retrospectives, where we reflect on a particular piece of work or a particular time period, and trying to get everybody's input to that, trying to get everybody to say, you know, what have we done here? What worked really well? Where might we improve a little thing, little things to keep moving forward? And really getting everybody involved in that. So it's almost like a group mentoring, if you like. It's really trying to pull things out, but without doing the kind of one-on-one piece. But as I say, maybe it's kind of related. I've worked with some really good teams we've turned some deliveries around in tight time scales. I've worked with some amazing product owners who are very passionate about what they do, and all these things contribute to that arsenal of experience that you take away to your next engagement.
And I think if I play back some of what you said, I loved it when you mentioned about asking somebody if they felt exposed, because everything else you said after that was trying to remove that exposure. It was about bringing the team around them, working together as a team. It's all very people focused. We work in technology, we work in a digital space, we deliver digital products and services, but ultimately it's people that deliver those things. It really, really made me feel good when you said that, because I that's something that I try and stick to myself now. Is if you ask somebody that question, do you feel exposed, you almost instantly remove the exposure, because they can come face to face with it, so to speak, and talk about what it is that's making them feel exposed, and then you can find a solution that and it doesn't have to be shared with people that person feels exposed. You can just give them something that removes the exposure about ever having to share they felt that way. And I know that's how you would approach it. But what I really like is about what you talked about there was teams and people and bringing them together. Right. And I think in any, you know, we essentially cannot do stuff on our own. We have to work with one another as best we can. And your methods there just explain so succinctly how that could be achieved. Do you have any, tips for somebody that's working in the agile space, maybe as a dev or something, who wants to move in that direction? Any words of wisdom you could offer for them trying to move into that career path?
I think that there's you can read a lot about Scrum Masters, which is kind of akin to what we do from a delivery management point of view in the government space. And one of the things that Scrum Master is described as is servant leadership. So, you know, being a kind of servant leader. And that's absolutely true. I sometimes don't like using the phrase because it's almost been overused. But actually, when you break it down into what it really means, I think that's where the value is. So I think it's, you know, if you're going to move into this space, like you say, it's about people. It's about getting the best out of people. It's about helping people get the best out of themselves. There's nothing more soul shattering than being in a job you really don't enjoy doing. So, you know, we kind of try and make it as fun as we can. And like I say, working in the government space with all these different departments, they kind of work generally in a similar kind of way when you move around a little bit, and the people you work with are really good and generally supportive. So I would say if any people want to move into this space, Scrum Master, Delivery Manager, that kind of thing, is really kind of look at yourself. You know, you've got to want to be a servant leader. You've got to be completely unselfish. You know, you've got to really look at how you can help members of the team, the whole team, other teams, you know, that collaboration piece. How can everybody help do their job? Some people are, you know, really passionate about their roles, but have a really good balance of realistic people appreciation. And, you know, kind of aspire to do that, you know, to work with people to get the job done, but do it in a fun way. So going back to your point about tips is, every day is a school day, you know, learn things. Do the training courses. I think there is a mentality to, you know, just be opening to learning. You know, go somewhere, do a training course if you can. If it's in the agile space, great. But I think when the first year of lockdown, I did a training course with Sotheby's. It was on art crime, which was just a personal interest. And I got a lot out of it. But again, it was that, actually, I want to learn a little bit about that. I'm really curious. And this is going to sound very corny for those people that watched Ted Lasso. He's got this thing, don't be judgmental, be curious. And it's absolutely fantastic. You know, it's about be curious about things, about the people, work with the people, how you get the best out of them. So do that. It shouldn't be something you want to do because you might see it as being quite a funky role, or it might be something that helps your ladder. It might be those things, but that shouldn't necessarily be the kind of driving point for that. But there's a lot of roles in Agile, and I go back to what we said at the very beginning, you know, these roles that where you and I are doing now 20, 30 years ago, they didn't exist. No. So it would have been difficult 30 years ago for me to say, actually, I want to be a Scrum Master in 30 years time, or I want to aspire to be a delivery manager in government, because actually those things just didn't exist. There is that keep your eyes open, look at the market, what's happening with roles. And then for me personally, it was finding, actually, I really enjoy that role. That's the role I want to really aspire to. And sometimes you kind of go past that and forget that's what you're after. And that's fine. Again, it's just part of that whole learning experience. I think there's a quote that's attributed to Mark Twain, isn't it, about, you know, in 20 years time you'll regret the things you didn't do more than the things that you did do. And again, that's another quote, I love that. So don't regret things if it goes wrong. Learn from it and move on and kind of get back on track.
I used to work for an education company, and their motto was always learning, and I've just used it ever since. And the other one I use, which is my version or a version of Mark Twain, which is, what's the worst that could happen? Give it a go. Nothing is it. Pretty much nothing is irreversible. When it comes to your career, I think there's, and that's the point of the show, really, is the choices that we make. Hopefully the show helps people understand where we've made some good choices, but it's trying to highlight that you don't always make good choices. I think you said yourself earlier, you kind of went beyond where you were looking for and realized when you were consulting that actually it was the day-to-day ground level work that excited you, not necessarily the program leadership. And being able to just be honest with yourself about that is great. And I think it's also maybe one of the benefits of being your own boss, so to speak, is you can have that level of honesty, can't you, when you've built up the experience to do so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we've got just a few minutes left. There's a couple of other points to try and get through. Is you talked about balance, and we talk a lot about work-life balance. What are your thoughts on what that looks like in the real world now, juggling always-on culture versus trying to get some time to yourself?
Well, I think after like, you and I, years of being in the latter part, hopefully, of career age. But that's not to say that we're kind of done yet. We've got a lot still to offer, and I think we both still enjoy what we do. I think it's been interesting. I think, like I said, the pandemic has been an absolute nightmare in a lot of regards. I think the whole working from home culture has changed massively because of it, and not necessarily all bad. Some people enjoy it. Some people still struggle with it. And I mentioned before about retrospectives where we reflect on previous things. And we did that 2 or 3 months after the pandemic, when everybody was full lockdown, because most people were enjoying the prospect of being at home, being with the family, being able to, you know, do with the kids and that. But what made me realise, we had a couple of team members that were struggling with it because they might have been at home with the parents, or they were in a house share and everybody's in there. And it opened my eyes a bit to how things are moving there. And actually, we championed a bit of, well, how soon can we get these people safely back into an office environment, because actually it's just good for their mental health. So I think where we're at now, we're not in that position now, thank goodness, but that balance is something that when you work for yourself is much easier to attain, and was one of the reasons when I started nearly 8 years ago to do that. And the same way you did as well, you get to choose how you do things. Going forward, I enjoy what I do. I will continue to do that. My wife and I have a camper van, so we'll kind of continue to enjoy that as well. That's been thoroughly enjoyable. We've got a couple of dogs. The younger one comes with us on our travels, and she loves it. But it is. It really helps. Then it's a bit of a reset. And we go with some friends of ours. He's ex-army, so he loves being able to. You know, he does what he does now. But also with the four of us go together with our dogs in our vans, and we really enjoy our time away and have a good laugh. But then we can come back then refreshed, back to work. What are we going to do this week? We've got this to tackle. Let's move on and see it. So the balance is really invaluable. And on that note, even working with the teams now, you know, life happens, you know, and I will say to teams, we meet every day first thing in the morning for a few minutes. We catch up on, you know, any challenges we might have, any support that might be required. But I do also remind them, look, we want you to be here to be part of this session because it's a valuable session. However, life happens. You know, if you need to take the kids to school, because somebody's ill, or they need a, you know, you've got an extra session because they've got after school club or whatever it might be, let me know, and, you know, we'll do that. Life continues. And it works both ways. You know, you've got to trust people to come back, and they're like, oh, I'll make that time up. It's like, you don't need to say that. I know you will, but thank you. You know, do what you need to do. So, like I say, it's fortunate to be in a position where I can say that to people. No one's knocking on my door. No one's worried about nobody, you know, not doing their role properly. If they're not, we'll help them to do it properly and get the best out of them. So yeah, balance for me is good. Working for myself, I've really enjoyed and will continue to enjoy. It's a nice place to be.
That's great. I mean, that's a really positive note to finish on. I think I love what you're saying about life happens. I'm seeing the I think it was the 80s t-shirt, Choose Life. I think that could be a thing yeah. that we could get on here. But it's also true, you know, it's life does happen, and we should all be allowed to make the choice that there are more important things in life than work.
Absolutely.
And how we handle that as adults is, you know, is from your perspective, from what you're saying, I think it's a fantastic way of doing it. So I think that's a really good place to finish. Dave, I just want to say thank you for joining me today. Thank you for the guidance and for your mentorship. I greatly appreciate it. And thanks for joining me on It's All About Choices.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you to everybody that watched or everybody that catches up on Spotify or via Apple Podcasts. Thank you all. Goodbye.